and welcome. I'm Richard Dugan, your host here on Tell Me Your Story. This is New Paradigms for a New World. We come your way every Saturday, 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com, and we archive our programs at richarddugan.com. It's the radio show's page. We encourage you to check out the website and the information that we have there as far as the links to our guests. We don't recreate a lot of the information from our guests' website. I don't believe it's necessary for me to reinvent the wheel. I just send you to where the wheel is and you can check it out. And so we encourage you to do that with all of our guests, including our guest for today. His name is Peter Canova. He is the author of a book that I am actually most fascinated with, including the fact that it's one of three. It's a book, one of the First Souls trilogy. Fascinating stuff. Holy Spirit or Holy Evil? And we're going to talk with the author of Pope Annalisa. Peter, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Well, it's great to be with you, and I have to tell you that Santa Barbara is one of my favorite American towns, and was actually the scene of my very first literary award way back when I was a beginning writer.
Oh, really? Well, wonderful. Then you've got a nice Santa Barbara connection there.
I do.
And certainly when you are in town next time, we'd love to have you in studio to do a face-to-face. Always enjoy talking with our guests right here in the city. Now, the thing that I find so fascinating about not just this book, but about you and your research. Now, forgive me for putting it in this context, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel as though we're dealing with another Dan Brown in terms of the fact that the research and the information that you utilize in the context of your work, as well as your lectures, speaking and engagements and so forth, it's incredibly extensive, but also very controversial. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, I think for some, it would certainly be considered controversial. I guess it really depends on your point of view. One person's controversy is another person's norm. But as far as the comparison of Dan Brown is concerned, it's kind of funny. I know Dan Brown. I've met him on a couple of occasions, actually, in my life as a former businessman. We had some dealings together. And certainly in terms of the depth of research, there are similarities there. But I think the one thing that probably is different is really kind of the path we took to get to that point, because my research really started with a series of vivid experiences, I guess you would call them psychic experiences, mm-hmm. that I had as a young man in my 20s. And it really changed my whole point of view about life, and it put me on a lifelong quest to sort of find out what were these unseen connections behind human beings that bind us together that could explain some of the experiences I had. And from there, it really went on to, I would say more book research and study and spiritual study. But my books really are a combination of information that I have received in my own meditations and actual historical and scientific research that I've done. And in each case, when I had a vision that was leading me in some direction, I really wouldn't go public with it until I found some analogs in the, quote, real world for it, so that, it wasn't, kind of a New Agey type of effort or something like that. But if there was a difference, it's just that I was getting a lot of this information, kind of channeled out in this manner. So that's what produced some of the uniqueness of the book.
Well, and these kinds of stories intrigue people to no end. I mean, yes, you're absolutely right that there are some who it is very controversial. They don't want to hear this kind of stuff, even if it is fiction. But when you start, and I know that the concept of writing a fiction / fact book novel is a wonderful thing, because basically you can do anything you want. I even think about, of course, the new movie that's out as we are talking here, Apollo 18. Well, there was no 18th mission, although what they want you to believe is that's what you were told. In this particular book, and I want to talk not just about Pope Annalisa, but I want to talk about, again, I want to go back also to your history, your past. You've mentioned a little bit of it, but I want to talk a little bit here about why this, I mean, you certainly know and knew when you started developing this concept that this was not going to be taken well by a lot of folks, especially very staunch Catholics. I mean, there is no role in the hierarchy of the Catholic Church for women, not in this context, especially. And it's just very contrary to all of that. So it's almost as if you're starting out, I don't want to say on the wrong foot, but you're not loved by all in that context. Is that a fair assessment?
Actually, I don't think it's an accurate assessment.
Okay.
I have to tell you something very interesting. First of all, let me just tell you very quickly that the book of Pope Annalise, although it deals with an African nun who rises to become pope in the near future world, it's not a Catholic book. It's a book that portrays the Catholic Church as a vehicle to tell a classical story about human origin, destiny, and purpose through the character, particularly of Pope Annalisa. So it has universal application. And I'll tell you that it's quite amazing that I have had people of all stripes, fundamentalist Christians, staunch Catholics, secular people, read this book, and universally they loved it. I did give it to a priest who was a family advisor of ours, and he was a little bit more upset with me, but you would expect that from the clergy because they're vested in a certain point of view. But you see, the reason why people aren't offended by this book is it's not a church-bashing book. It's not a Christian-bashing book by any stretch of the imagination. If anything, it expands upon the meaning of Christianity and the meaning of the Christian message by bringing back information that about the early church and about the true history of the early church. And so, Richard, I guess I would liken it this way. The book takes this point of view. If you take a look at our traditional dogmas and scriptures and as an outlook on spiritualism, you're looking, let's say, at the valley from the base of the mountain. But when you take these expanded scriptures that Pope Annalisa portrays in here in the expanded story, it's like looking a little bit higher up the mountain, so you get a bigger panorama of the valley. It's not negating the experience of the other. It's really expanding it. It's not saying it's wrong. It's just saying, hey, let's look at this from a different vantage point. And I think people pick that up in the book. And so surprisingly, I think it's hardly offended anybody.
Well, that's a good thing, obviously. And when you can do that, when anybody can present their ideas, their concepts, their beliefs, their musings even in such a way that people are willing to listen. We did an interview a year and a half ago. And when I started the interview, I said, I'm not going to tell you of which faith system, as I used the term, my guests are from. We're going to talk about the tenets of the faith. We're going to talk to these people about who they are and where they're from. At the end of the show, I will tell you where they're from because the name of the faith is so negatively charged. But I felt that it was important that people hear the information. So a lot of people, they get lost, or they shut down, or they turn off, or they turn away because they'll hear a certain catchphrase, oh no, can't go there.
But, well, I think you are very wise in your perception of how to go about that. Now, here at Pope Annalisa, we're not dealing with any particular denomination or religion. Like I say, the Catholic Church is a vehicle to tell a story.
Right.
What we're really talking about is that in my 30 years of research, I discovered basically what is a universal spiritual tradition that was buried here in the West and severed the links that the Western mystical tradition had with Buddhism, Hinduism, and other major religions. But it has common threads and common precepts throughout it that go through all even the three Abrahamic religions, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, that this mystical tradition exists within them. And so this is really spirit transcends religions. You see, religions tend to get into dogmas and box people into corners and demand certain beliefs of them. But true spirituality is more open and expansive to exploration and people interpreting their own visions and their own images. And this book is kind of a guide to help people along that path to their own spirituality rather than espousing a particular dogma or point of view.
Right. Now, you've obviously 30 years of research behind you you have researched in many different areas, and I know enough about the process of researching that you want to find primary source information. But as time goes on, that becomes more and more difficult to find because a lot of that information was either destroyed by those who conquered or has just wasted away just due to time and the decay and deterioration of the material. So how does one... How did you go about making sure that what you had was primary source?
Well, in the case of the spiritual traditions, I went straight to the holy books. For instance, I would look at the Vedas in the Hindu religion, or the Upanishads, the Bhagavad Gita, the classic literature in Hinduism. The same thing, for what I could get a hold of the Buddhist texts and so forth. But we're talking primarily here about the Western branch of the spiritual tradition. So besides looking at the Bible, of course, which is the authorized work for Western religion, I looked at the Gnostic Gospels, which were discovered in the deserts of Egypt in 1945, and it shed a whole new light on Christianity and Judaism. These were a collection of pagan, Jewish, and Christian texts, because the Gnostics were a spiritual orientation that permeated all different religions. They particularly embraced Christianity as they saw the figure of Jesus of Nazareth being a continuation of this ancient spiritual tradition, which they were already aware of. And the Gnostic texts were really quite amazing. It showed, for one thing, there was a real diversity in early Christianity. Early Christianity had two main streams of thought. It had many different interpretations in many different communities, but two primary tributaries of thought. One was Orthodox Christianity, which is pretty much what we have today in most of the mainstream Christian denominations, and the other was Gnosticism. And the Gnosticism, Gnostic Christians tended to look at the Christian story in a more allegorical or metaphysical sense, and they would have their own visions about things like reality, creation, the origin of the human being. And you would say, okay, well, what do visions count for? Because anybody can have a vision. But the interesting thing about the Gnostics were that all their separate visions all had a strong commonality to it. The myths and the stories that they told when they brought back this information from their these higher planes of consciousness, they told it in the form of myths, because that was the way you conveyed information to people at that time. We didn't have texts and scientific texts and language and so forth. But these myths were all strikingly similar, with some variations, but strikingly similar in the stories that they told about humanity's origin and destiny and the creation of the universe. And not were they similar within the Western sphere, but they had great relations to the teachings of the Far East and so forth. So these texts were a primary source for me, and they were very, very difficult to wade through. You really had to do a lot of background research in order to put yourself in a position of the understanding the words, the mentality, and the meaning behind what they were saying as if you were living back 2,000 years ago.
Well, now, you didn't begin at year one of these 30 years of research saying, okay, I'm going to be writing this trilogy, and so I need to begin this research. What drove you to begin doing all of this incredible research, which I find so fascinating, because I started in my career in broadcasting working for a Christian station, and I started asking all of the, what I like to call the heretical questions, those that would have gotten me tossed into a dungeon back to 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 years ago. But it was like, I wanted to know. You know, who set up, you have these 66 books of the Bible. Well, who said, what's a criterion? And who set these guys up as the ones to make this determination? You know, I don't accept them as the authority, is sort of my rebellious side. So how did this ball get rolling?
Yeah, well, let me just make a sidebar here. It's very interesting what you said about your attitude towards this, because in actuality, it's just so hard to find a smoking gun, a definitive smoking gun, in terms of historical documents and even scientific research today, because the book does get into the parallels between this ancient tradition and quantum physics. But even in quantum physics, you know, almost everything we deal with is theory, and almost everything we deal with in historical reconstruction is theory or interpretation. Of course, there's a preponderant weight of evidence that makes one path a little bit more plausible than another, but you know, it's very hard to determine a smoking gun. Even in the Bible itself, as you said, it was the compilation of a certain group of people with a certain point of view. It doesn't necessarily mean it was the only or correct point of view. There were many, many scriptures in the old days. But to get to your question, this gets a little bit in my background, and I'm just going to give you a very quick history, because I think it's important to understand the point of view from which all this body of work is written. When I was in my 20s, I found out that I had the ability of a medical intuitive, and I was able to diagnose very accurately conditions of people who were thousands of tens of thousands of miles away from me simply by having their name, age, and address. And this was done in a manner where, you know, you would have a person who had the information on a card in front of you, and they would just give you the name, age, and address, and they would, you know, ask you what you saw. First case I ever did in my life, I can remember very vividly today. It was a gentleman, elderly gentleman, down in Miami. I got a picture of his heart, and it looked like it was tilted in a funny position. And I said, well, it appears his aorta is being pinched. He has a blockage in his aorta. And they said, that's correct. And what else can you tell me? And I said, well, you know, it looks like a foreign object, like a metallic or some kind of foreign object in the bottom quadrant of his heart, which leads me to believe that he has a pacemaker. And they said, that's correct. Can you tell us what year the pacemaker was installed? So I saw the hands of a clock spinning wildly, and they stopped dead at 10 o'clock, which indicated to me 10 years prior. It was 1975 at the time, so I said it was 1965, and that information was correct. Well, as soon as I realized that I had that ability to do that, and I started practicing it more, it just opened up like a floodgate. And I began to realize that, you know, how can I get this information? How is it possible that this information can come to me in such a manner unless we are all connected by some sort of energy matrix? We're all part of some energy matrix or some unseen field that links us all together. And that really spurred me on for the rest of my life to try and understand in a rational, you know, left brain kind of way what this was all about. And I'll tell you, my most recent experience is quite interesting. When 9/11 occurred, the night before 9/11 on the 10th, my wife and I were upstairs in our bedroom, and all of a sudden, a bank of lights, we have spotlights that face our bed, all of a sudden the whole bank of lights went off and woke us up, and we smelled an awful smell in our room, like the smell of burning flesh. I called it like a charnel house smell. I went outside the door, I couldn't smell it. I went into all the adjacent rooms, I couldn't smell it. It was only in our room. Of course, we woke up the next day to find out about the horror of 9/11. Mm-hmm. And then just a couple days ago, on the 10th anniversary of 9/11, in the first time in 10 years, the same bank of lights went on at almost the same time on the night before. Now, people can say, well, that's kind of a coincidence, but what I'm saying is that once you've opened up to a certain energy channel, you start to get information in. It's like a radio, sitting in front of a radio station. You get static all your life, but all of a sudden, if you keep persevering, you keep tuning, you get a clear channel, and it's broadcasting 24/7, and it's giving information as your mind guides it. It gives you corresponding information. So this is really what propelled me, because I was, you know, spiritually oriented, to sort of use that whole story and that whole energy to examine and to explain some of the deeper questions that we, you know, face with in terms of religious and spiritual questions. And that's how I came up with this body of work of Pope Annalisa and the First Souls.
I think it's extraordinary, especially with my interest in spirituality and religion, doctrine, dogma, and different works. And I do remember an author that I read years ago, and he was actually, I'd been interviewing for maybe the first 5 or 10 years of my career, and I interviewed this gentleman, and I read his book cover to cover. And I used to say that it was the first adult book that I had read cover to cover since I'd started doing that, because it was the only one that really grabbed me. But he was revealing information as well, you know, and he would give his proofs. He'd said, and I went here, and I went here, and I went here. Well, I had the same two items in my library, so I did the same research, because I didn't want to be saying, well, this guy named John, he did this research, and this is what he came up with, and I find it fascinating. It's not his research anymore. Now it's mine. I find that a lot of people are not doing that, and whether it's because they're too busy in their lives and they just want to accept what they're being told. And I'm wondering if you take that same position, not just in terms of the research you've done, but in terms of what you tell people. Yeah, this is what I found, but don't take my word for it. Check it out for yourselves. Is that something that you feel somewhat strongly about?
It's right in the afterword in my book where I really caution people not to take anything at face value, including what they've read in my book, before they prove it out in their own experience. Because ultimately, what I'm really trying to do, the reason why I write these books and I go all around the country speaking, is because I'm trying to help people get to the same point where they can have contact with the same contact with this higher information that I've had. Because once you have contact with higher intelligence, all the things that we were told in church, all the things, the spiritual things that we were told that sound like cliches, you no longer have to take those on faith, because you now have graduated from faith to knowledge. Now, I'm not talking about book knowledge. I'm talking about knowledge that's derived from direct experience. So all these things that I say to people, and they may, you know, your listeners may say, well, gee, that sounds really fantastic, and things like that really happen. Well, I don't blame them for feeling that way, because if they haven't been through it themselves, well, sure, they'll be skeptical. Mm-hmm. But once you've been through it yourself, you own it. You know it's a fact. You know it's a reality. You know these unseen things I'm talking about outpicture themselves in our lives in concrete ways, and it just becomes second nature. You accept it. But people have to get to that point themselves. They have to make that contact themselves in order to believe it. That's where I'm trying to help people get to. So sure, I'm always telling them that, you know, you read this stuff, but don't really accept anything until you've tried it out. Accept it provisionally and keep it in the back of your mind, but don't file it as a belief or reality in your life until you really proved it out in your own spiritual practice or your own experience.
I know one experience I had with one particular, I like to refer to them as sects of Christianity, very dogmatic, very rigid in its belief system. And they said that if it doesn't appear in the books, then it doesn't happen. And what that was saying to me was that if I have an experience that you can't find in that book, I didn't have that experience. I have never taken that position. If you tell me that you levitated off the floor 6 feet and you saw the apparition of Krishna, you know, or Buddha, or Jesus, who am I to question that?
You know, it's really kind of funny, because a lot of people who aren't Catholics, they sort of take a look at the Catholic Church and they say, gee, that's a really kind of rigid and dogmatic church. But the funny thing is, Catholics themselves are pretty wild and imaginative people. How often is it that you look in the special interest or human interest column in the newspaper on a nightly news, and you see some Catholic person saying something like, well, you know, I was in my kitchen, and I opened up the freezer door, and there it was. It was the face of the Virgin Mary on that ice cube right over there. Yep, right next to the Hot Pockets. Well, you know, the funny thing is, people ridicule that, but yeah, the fact of the matter is, that was that person's expression of spirit within themselves. But, you see, they've been so trained by the church to channel that spiritual expression into forms that are acceptable by the church and the priesthood. So that it takes the form of the Virgin Mary. So, you know, in a way, it kind of relates to what you're saying, because there are certain groups who do. They want to put the stamp of approval on what is spiritually real and, you know, what is not. And, of course, I think that does a bit of a disservice to people, because it hems them in and it sort of narrows the domain of their possibility.
Peter Canova is my guest. He's the author of the first of three books called, this one is called Pope Annalisa. It's book one of the First Souls trilogy. We look forward to 2 and 3 coming out soon. And we're going to continue talking with Peter in just a moment. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay right where you are.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
And we are talking with Peter Canova. He is the author of Pope Annalisa. It is book one of the First Souls trilogy. And Peter, I'm always intrigued by stuff like this. This has always fascinated me, but it also has frustrated me because of the whole issue that you were talking about as we wrapped up our last segment in regards to the church. I mean, I was born and raised a Catholic. And it's funny how, as I was working for those 15 years in Christian broadcasting, how I kept hearing of Catholics who left the church, who, you know, they're ex-Catholics and all of that kind of stuff. I never did. Now, I am not a practicing Catholic, but I didn't leave the church. There is still so much that I love about it. It's the ritual and the symbolism and the liturgy, the candles and the incense, the community. You know, I may not be a practicing Catholic, but there's so much that I love about it that has basically made me who I am, that I can't exit out. I think it's silly to even think of that.
Yeah, and nor should you even want to.
Yeah.
I'm pretty much in the same boat as you are. I was raised in the same tradition, and I feel exactly the same way that you expressed. And that's why I say that, you know, The books are not into church bashing as so many books are, because sure, the Catholic Church has done some bad stuff over the centuries and so forth, but you know, you have to really look at it as a body. And if you look at the people itself, and the people really are the body of the churches, and you know, they go to church for many different reasons, like you cited and so forth. And I think that today the reality is that even though Catholics, probably more so than other religions, theoretically demand obedience, I think Catholics come to their own contemplation of spirituality in their own minds, regardless of what a priest or you know, the hierarchy is going to tell them, and that their membership in the church may be for, you know, reasons, or their bonds with the church may be for reasons other than, you know, the dogmas and things that are being taught. But I think that's the way of the modern world. I think people are becoming more educated, more sophisticated, and I think people are having more experiences that can't necessarily be explained, or problems that can't necessarily be solved within the context of the traditional forms of their religion. But that doesn't mean they have to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
No,
that,
you're absolutely right. I would agree. And again, this program is designed to bring people different concepts, different ideas, or new paradigms for a new world, a world where in which we all can quite literally have the things that we truly want, that not everybody wants the same thing. So there's more than enough for everybody to have the things that they want, to fulfill their dreams, their aspirations, their passions. And the other aspect is bringing people choices and knowledge of those choices. I often say that if there were this fog, you know, that was hanging over the ground, and you were walking down this road, you could see just enough ahead of you, and you stayed to the left. And you kept staying to the left, but every so often you'd see a tree over on the other side of the road. What you didn't see, because of the fog, was that there was actually a road to the right, but you stayed to the left because you were told to stay to the left. And in essence, in some cases, you were going in a circle. So if the fog lifted, suddenly you came upon that tree that you saw on the right, and you see the fork in the road. Oh, I could go to the right. I don't know what's down there, but it's going to be different. It's going to be something new and exciting and intriguing. I may go that way. We try to give them that right side of the road, so to speak, and again, in a very euphemistic and metaphorical context. So bringing what you have to share, I think, is extremely important for some folks who are listening, because they've had that difficulty in stepping out.
Well, I think the way I usually describe my books and my work to people is that Pope Annalisa and the talks that I give around the country are a signpost for people along their spiritual journey. But I always caution people, never mistake the signpost for the destination.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And I think that that's what happens with conventional religion quite a bit. If you use that that metaphor of the highway as our journey, our spiritual journey through life, and you have way stations along the way, it's great to stop at a way station and see what they've got there and take you know, take sustenance or refreshment from them. But the churches would have you punch your ticket and stay within that building like it's the be-all and end-all, whereas the spiritual seeker will take what they can from there and go on to the next way station on their journey.
I think one of the struggles that we all have is when we read something from the sacred writings, whatever they be, of the faith that we have chosen, and we read them, and we are then told what they mean. And I've often found a struggle in that, because I went through both a very pro-Catholic and a very pro-Protestant, and then a kind of letting go of all of that and saying, you know, I've got to find my own way, and I have to let other people find their own way, because I became very dogmatic in my positions, whether it was pro-Catholic or pro-Protestant. I think what really opened my eyes up, I was producing a radio program back in Phoenix, and it was called the Radio Rosary Program, the Family Rosary Program. And it was just that. It was 15 to 20 minutes of the recitation followed by a homily of some sort. And I would produce those programs for the particular programmer that wanted these done. And I remember getting a phone call of criticism from someone saying, there's nothing about the recitation of the rosary in the Bible. I said, yes, you might be correct on that level, but if you would just take a few moments, line by line, you will find that every word that you find in the rosary is in the Bible. And what can be wrong with that? And it was that kind of dawned on me that, you know, you kind of have to let people find their own way, and you can't stop them from searching.
Well, that was the difference in early Christianity between the two branches that we talked about, which was the mystical Gnostic tradition and the Orthodox tradition. The Orthodox basically kept pushing for one interpretation, one way, yeah, one creed, whereas the mystical branch of the church said, you know what, spirit doesn't operate like that. Spirit comes into the world through archetypes and symbols, and each person has to give, stamp their own shape and meaning on that for the experience of their lives. And incidentally, that's not a static process either, because what you view now may change later on in life. You know, every time I think I've discovered a truth, I just get knocked flat in my butt, you know, about 6 months later when I find a newer and superseding truth to it. So, you know, we have to really keep an open mind and take things provisionally. And remember, always remember that it's a journey, it's a mystical journey, and it's always a journey of growth. It's never a journey of stagnation. It's never something that you are going to always get your arms around. Because remember, we're like parts seeking the whole. Yeah. And how can the part ever grasp the whole? Well, you know, at least at this level of existence, we really can't. So it's a constant seeking. But with that seeking, it's a process of growth, and it's a process of us getting more enlightened and learning more and becoming more mature. And, you know, it's certainly something that is absolutely worth the effort, because if you're not really on that path, then you're kind of at the mercy of just whatever happens in this material world, and for the most part, that's not always the best thing. But to have another perspective for that from on high really helps you out through your road in life.
It truly does, and you offer that to us, not only through this conversation, but also through the book and the trilogy that you're working on. And the first book, of course, we're talking about Pope Annalisa, which is book one of the First Souls trilogy. It's a novel by our guest, Peter Canova. Now, I know that this is probably asked quite often in some of your interviews and talks about the woman on the cover.
Sometimes, yep.
Okay. What can you tell me about her? I mean, I'm curious as to the woman who chose to be the representation of the character in your book, but also in terms of the woman in the book and how you came to create her, because obviously it came from your own experiences down through your life.
Well, as I found after I wrote the book, all these characters in the book were, to a large extent, fragmented pieces of myself, different aspects of my personality. But I think that, you know, with most writers, that they always embody aspects of your personality in that. But also, you know, based on traits that exceptional people that I have known. The young lady in the cover was a model from New York, and I had a very vivid vision of how I wanted that book cover to be, right down to the expression on the face, the pose, the particular type of look that this woman would have, because I lived in Africa for 3 years, and I there was a certain look of a certain tribal area that I wanted to portray there. So I kind of scoured around and fortunately found this young lady, and we did a shoot for about 4 or 5 hours to try and kind of get the right, you know, just the right look. And that's how that materialized. But it all started off with it wasn't an accident. It started off with a vision, and the vision ended up really being on the book cover.
What I find interesting when I'm reading books such as yours, my mind's theater begins to create the movie. And then when a movie comes out of that book, and this happened to me not too long ago, I was astounded. Now, I didn't see the actors, okay, say whether it was Tom Hanks or Jennifer Aniston or whoever, you know. But the way they made this person look, I'm going, that was the guy in my movie. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that that's what you're kind of talking about, is you saw your movie unfolding in your head. I'm wondering about the possibility, the potential for some type of external cinematic presentation of Pope Annalisa.
Well, I think the possibilities for that are actually quite good. The book was written cinematically because I was a little bit of an amateur filmmaker in my youth, and I did try and write from the perspective of the scenes being behind almost like a camera observing the action. As you mention this. I'm actually in discussion with a couple of different production groups out in Hollywood who have expressed interest in the book, and we're a little early in the discussion, so we'll have to see how that goes. But I've gotten so much general interest in it that I have no doubt that one day the book will be a movie. It's growing in popularity. I started off this book, actually, I didn't have a big publishing company behind me, so I had to really kind of get out there and promote it myself, and that's the state of affairs for new authors in this day and age. You're going to spend all your own money, all your own time, and all your own effort because publishers will do next to nothing for you. So it's been a real grassroots type of thing, but the book is really starting to catch on, and it's becoming kind of a little cult classic in certain circles, but now it's kind of catching on to the general public. And, you know, as that happens, I think it enhances the possibility for the existing interest that I'm getting right now in Hollywood for a movie version of the book.
A couple of questions that I ask my guests pretty regularly as we are fast approaching the end of our program. One is having to do, you've talked about much of what you have done over the years, obviously the research and so forth over the past 30 and, of course, in your 20s. The wonderful experiences that you had on a spiritual level, and then, of course, you know, being born and raised into the Catholic tradition and so forth. But you could have done a lot of other things, gone a lot of other different directions. Why this? Why now?
Well, actually, I did go in a completely different direction. I wasn't basically born a writer. I was a businessman, an international businessman with my own company that I had with my brother. We built luxury hotels all around the world, and even before that incarnation of our business, I was in the import, shipping and import-export business back in the days when I was in Africa. So I pretty much, for most of my life, had a business background. It was this discovery of this contact that I had in my 20s with this higher source of information never left me. It left an indelible print in me, so that even while I was in the business world, I continued my study, my meditation, my research. It was a constant companion with me. And a confluence of different events happened that led me into writing. I'd always had an affinity for writing. And I decided one day, and this was at Santa Barbara, I went to a writer's conference out there, and I decided to give it a shot. And the first short story I wrote won a first literary prize at the Santa Barbara Writers' Conference, and that was important for me. It was an important breakthrough, because the tough thing for a new writer is that it's a free-floating profession. You don't have a mentor. You don't have somebody standing over your shoulder and saying, that's good, that's bad, people won't like this, people won't understand that. You're really in a vacuum, and you really just don't have any yardsticks or parameters. So the tough thing is to develop your craft in an intelligible way that makes sense to somebody outside yourself, and you know, getting that kind of feedback. And the Santa Barbara's Writers Conference showed me that, well, you know what, maybe I have the possibility of getting through to another human being. So all these things kind of converged then, my spiritual or psychic experiences, my ability to write, and my travels, which were greatly assisted me in the background of the book, all kind of came together in producing this book, Pope Annalisa.
Interesting stuff. And I'm wondering, are you still doing these, you mentioned medical intuitive readings of sorts? Is that something that you still continue to do on a part-time basis or so here and there?
I do not do that anymore, except occasionally in certain instances. I guess because there's a reason my mind wants me to be open to it, I'll get a flash of a person or something. But as a studied practice, no, I've stopped doing that for many years now, because I decided that the way that I wanted to use whatever abilities that I had, I decided I wanted to channel that into reaching a larger audience rather than working, you know, one-on-one with people in that manner. And I felt that at a point I graduated, and I felt I could be, you know, more effective that way. So I stopped doing the personal readings, probably a good, you know, 15, 18 years ago.
Mm. As our listeners know, I don't ask these questions. The universe asks the questions. I'm just along for the ride. So bear with me as I continue to probe you a little bit before we wrap up our program. And you've probably answered this question, but I haven't asked you this question. So if you wouldn't mind indulging me, who is Peter Canova?
Well, let me see. I try to remember, first of all, if I've been asked that question, probably not that directly. You know, and sometimes I really don't even know who I am myself. I think that we all come down here with a purpose. Sometimes we align our conscious life with our unconscious purpose. Sometimes we don't. I think Peter Canova is a person who's been very fortunate that he has been able to take that inner desire, that inner burning, and align it with his outer life in a way that hopefully has meaning and guidance to other people, to help them along their path, to at least get to the point where they are able to make that breakthrough and realize that there is a higher source that they're connected to out there. Because once you have that realization, it's a very comforting feeling. You really do feel connected. You feel part of a universe now, not just an isolated individual. And I remember when I first had that realization, I went home and I probably had the best sleep I've ever had in my life. I was always a fitful sleeper. I woke up that morning as if I'd never moved an inch from my sleeping position, and I was relaxed and I was comfortable because I felt at ease. I felt at one and, you know, at peace with the universe. And I like to see other people be able to have that experience.
And finally, before we wrap up, we want to give people an opportunity to check out the book. Obviously, they can go to the website popeanalisa.com, and they can certainly order the book through that portal, if you will. What is it that you hope to achieve through not just this book, but the trilogy?
Well, again, it gets back to the fact that I had these experiences in my own life where I was able to graduate from faith to knowledge of a higher power, a higher intelligence, which we are part of. And that connection was just so important in reshaping my life. And I really hope to try and use this body of work that I'm doing you know, as a way to help people on that path themselves, because you can't repeat my path. Everybody is unique and everybody is individual, but there are many things that we can learn from one another on that journey. And if for no other reason, having my experience help people connect their own dots into a pattern that can form a pathway for them to have this direct contact with higher intelligence, the divine. You can put your own name to it. It's out there. Like I say, it's like a signal that's out there 24/7. You just have to tune it, and you have to find it, and then, you know, it gives you a lot of great guiding information for your life. And if I can be an assistance in that path to people, that's kind of how I've defined my life right now. That's the role that I'm trying to fulfill in the work and the travel that I'm doing around the country right now.
Well, I'm very grateful that our paths have converged for this particular time and opportunity to share your story and the work that you're putting out to folks, giving them an opportunity to, again, open those doors. I've often thought that I need to put a warning at the beginning of each one of my radio programs, and this kind of stems from my Christian broadcasting days, where they used to talk about how the word of God would go out, it would never return void, and I began to muse about that, thinking, well, yeah, and you sort of stepped into this a little bit, Peter, earlier in the program, when you talk about once you've heard something, once you've seen something, once you've experienced it, you can't undo that. So the warning would go, be advised that once you've heard what the guest has to say, you cannot unhear it. You will have to deal with it somewhere down the line.
Yeah, there's a little phrase, if I can remember, in Pope Annalisa, where it says that once the mind or the person has been stretched by this information, it can never go back to its original dimensions.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what we try to do here. We try to expand that, and I mean, it reminds me of what I was told as a kid growing up, you know, go to the library and read a book and broaden your horizons, you know? And that's what we try to do here a little bit on a more spiritual or metaphysical level. Peter Canova, thank you so much for your time and your work. Annalisa, Pope Annalisa, and popeannalisa.com is the website. And we hope that next time you're in town in the Santa Barbara area, whether it's for an awards ceremony or not, we'd love to sit down and talk with you again.
Well, thank you for having me, and I'll say goodbye to the good people of Santa Barbara, and I wish everybody well.
This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Until next Saturday at 3 p.m. Pacific time, as we stream live on the internet, richarddugan.com. Love to all.